Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, it's been a long road. I don't know where it's gonna take me. Oh no, I got faith. My fam, my loved ones, my block, my people. Sort of. It's a struggle. You just gotta keep up, keep rocking, keep your eyes on the prize. The other foot in front of you. You never know where life will take you, man. Ride with you.
Back in the 70s, dad just a boulder. A little earlier, my grandma raised a daughter. A beautiful thing, she was a ghetto flower. Caught a young man's attention with her power. It was love at first sight, I saw she thought. But a couple months later, he left her with a broken heart. Young and naive, only 17. About to have a young mouth to feed. Head down, she could feel the shame. A couple months later, labor pains. She looked down in a new sun's eyes. A flashy smile, as big as the skies. Pops gave her being a man to try. Worked as a mechanic, mama of a Burger King. Meanwhile, late at night, she was studying. She did a thing and she got an degree in chef.
All in one lifetime, it's just all in one lifetime.
All in my ups.
All in one lifetime, it's just all in one lifetime.
All in my ups.
All in one lifetime, it's just all in one lifetime.
All in my ups.
All in one lifetime, it's just all in one lifetime.
All in my ups.
Flash to the future, now I'm 14. And my pops up and left the scene. Now I'm a young kid, walking the block. And no white man, no, my mama's a cop. They show me no love, a young man locked in handcuffs. Mama always worked in the streets to raise us. Here's a twist, my uncle white as snow. And he's always telling me the right way to go. Until one day the cops took him to, yo. Imagine the pain, conflicted inside. Not knowing whether I wanna ride or die. I get down on my knees and I'm screaming why. I hit the streets like a soldier boy. Running a jacket, clapping an accent. No bad thing better happen. But one night, I slept and had a dream. My uncle told me to relax and breathe.
All in one lifetime, it's just all in one lifetime.
All in my ups.
All in one lifetime, it's just all in one lifetime.
All in my ups.
All in one lifetime, it's just all in one lifetime.
All in my ups.
All in one lifetime, it's just all in one lifetime.
All in my ups.
Things change, I'm older now. Focus now. God, yo, he blessed his child. Mama came up and met the right man. We had a differences, but that's just growing up, man. Two more sisters, two more brothers, plus my three, all love each other. Man, it's a strange trip, life. Thank you, Lord, for giving me mics. They got the tools to get the globe open. Please, world, come feel me, cause if not, I still got family. And it ain't always necessarily blood. Is anybody in this world gonna show you love? Everybody take these words to heart, cause my real fan is the one that sat and played their part. I lived in the streets while I dream in the mansions. I done my dirt with the best of intentions.
All in one lifetime, it's just all in one lifetime.
All in my ups.
All in one lifetime, it's just all in one lifetime.
All in my ups.
All in one lifetime, it's just all in one lifetime.
All in my ups.
All in one lifetime, it's just all in one lifetime.
All in my ups.
Good evening, everyone. Hello, how's it going? I'm hoping you're having a great Monday, as I am. Real busy, real excited for everything that's coming up. Really looking forward to the holidays. I'm just like so excited for everything that's going on. Got some snow over the weekend in our area, and I'm kind of excited. I know some people don't get excited, for example, my boys, because they have to go out and shovel. But I love it. I love the snow. I mean, I know it can get to you after a while because it's so dark so early and it's cold, but you know what, there's just something magical about snow. I love Christmas snow, and that to me is so magical. And it's just a really nice, it was a nice little storm. It wasn't too bad, it wasn't too cold, but I just loved it. So yes, we've been off the air for a little bit because we're kind of moving things around, trying to figure out what schedule works best for our show. We've got a lot of exciting guests coming up, so figure we'll get the kinks out this year, so next year we're going to hit the ground running. For our listeners, Mountain Man is on the mend. I am like the worst friend in the world. I was supposed to go see him, and I haven't had a chance to because I actually came down sick. And on top of that, my truck decided that it needs to get fixed. It's not broken, but it needs to be fixed. We had to order a part for it, so I can't go too far with it right now. I'm hoping everyone else out there is having an amazing day and an amazing weekend. That you've had an amazing weekend, and I'm just so glad you guys are all here. I've missed you. Yes, I have. I've really missed everybody. I'm really excited about the guest we're going to have today, Tom Barnum. He's a girls varsity coach, and I'm really excited to have him on the air soon, get to talk to him about some of the amazing things he's done with the girls program at Little Catholic. We've seen him. It's been a work in progress, and he's been doing an amazing job, so we'll get to talk to him. But before we do, Motivational Monday. Yes, 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 it is. It's Motivational Monday, and I'm really excited. Just a lot of really great things is kind of coming along. You know me, I'm not going to focus on the negative because it's just not worth my time and effort. It's been a rough patch there for a little bit for some things, but you know what? Inconsequential. We get over it. We overcome. This too shall pass. If we remember that, then we don't focus so much on it. So for Motivational Monday, I'm going to implore you, motivate you, and just have you kind of think about simplifying your holidays this year. Yes, everybody has talked about the recession. Everybody keeps talking about the unemployment rate and how people sadly are losing their homes and losing their jobs and just a lot of not so great things going on right now. So, of course, with all that added pressure, we now have to deal with the holidays. And when I say deal with the holidays, that's the kind of negativity that people put it into. It's something that we have to, quote, unquote, deal with or get through or can't wait till it's over. Don't get caught up in that. Remember, it's not about the amount of presents under the tree. It's more about the amount of you under the tree, if you get what that means. For me, it means the fact that what's really exciting is the fact that if you put a little bit of yourself in those gifts, not so much the price tag, not so much time and effort that you put into finding just the right gift, you know, going out to the malls and beating the crowds and being the first in line. That's not what it's about. It's not about the latest toy. It's not about the great. That's not what it's about. It's about giving a gift that comes from the heart, something that means something. And I know for me, one of the greatest gifts I received over the years was something that my children made me. I had a lot of homemade gifts in my day. And I have to say, this one in particular was just amazing to me, what the boys did, and this is the boys that got together. And they got pictures of themselves when they were babies, and they put them up on this amazing frame. And then what they did is they wrote me a small love note underneath each of their pictures. And in doing so, they thanked me for the kind of parent that I had been, acknowledged the rough patches that we went through, but were grateful and thanked me for the fact that we still have the opportunity continue on. And that gift has been on my mantle for about 7 years now. That's how long ago it was that the boys gave it to me. And every time I think something's not worth it or I'm having a rough day, I just take a quick look at that and it reminds me that's what it's all about. And I have to admit, I've had other gifts given to me that were very expensive, very nice, and I'm sure they spent a lot of time, but if you ask me what they were right now, I really wouldn't be able to tell you. I'd have to really think about it. I'd have to try to remember who gave me that particular blouse or what happened to that particular bottle of perfume. And as much as I appreciated those gifts and I think they're awesome and I love getting gifts, I'm not going to even pretend that I don't. I love boxes. I love ripping paper and just the whole excitement of it. There's just something so unique and incredible about when someone gives of themselves. I know my children have done that over the years. My daughter in particular, she had me for a Secret Santa 1 year. And I just knew it was her as soon as I opened the gift because she knew little details about me, about how much I love dogs, what my favorite color was, some of the silly things that I've said in the past, and they knew right away that it was her. Same token, one of my sons wrote me a poem 1 year, and it just meant so much that he took the time to reflect on our past, reflect on our present, and where we're going in the future. And those are the gifts that I hold so dear to me, to my heart. So this year, simplify. When I talk to my kids, the memories they remember the most is baking the cookies, singing happy birthday to baby Jesus when we put him under the tree. They remember the time we went to the mountains and we were in the middle of nowhere. You know, we had electricity, but we didn't have cable, and we had television, but you had to rent the movies. And it was just an amazing time. And they always talk about that, the fact that we were going to buy a little baby tree and wind up not finding one. So we wind up, it was so funny, we found a tree by the side of the road that was for sale. And basically it goes to show how trustworthy these people are. They're like, leave money in mailbox. So we did. We left the money, but unfortunately the tree was a lot bigger than we had planned, so it just wasn't going to fit into the tree stand. So it decided to fall on one of my boys. It pinned one of the boys against the wall, and when I came back from shopping for the kids, it was so funny to see this tree dangling from the rafter. I mean, if you moved it, it would sway back and forth. So, and then all the handmade ornaments. We made handmade ornaments that year, and we also decorated stockings. We made cookies, sang carols, not that great, but it was fun. So just that holiday, and for me and my husband, that holiday kind of cemented us because we are a blended family, and that was, I think, our second Christmas together. And to have all our kids together and the in-laws, and it was just an amazing time. We had so much fun, and it was just a really good time. So simplify. And those are the Christmas that my kids talk about and remember all the time. So for Motivational Monday, I'm hoping you get motivated to simplify. Have fun with it. If you're stressed out and you're angry about the holidays, something's wrong. Reflect on that. If you're not having fun, it's not worth doing. Just remember that. So with that, I have a couple of callers, and we'll get to them right away. I'm, like again, I said, Mountain Man's not in the house, so I'm having a hard time controlling this thing, so we'll see what happens. Good evening. You are on the Diamond in the Rough show. Who is this, please?
Are you sure I'm on the Diamond in the Rough?
You're absolutely on the Diamond in the Rough. How's it going?
Are you positive I'm on the Diamond in the Rough show?
Mountain Man, I just told everybody what a horrible friend I've been because I was supposed to see you for a whole week, and because my car broke down and I was sick, I haven't even called you. I'm like the worst person in the world right now.
Yeah, I heard all of that, you. What am I going to do with you?
I don't know. Santa Claus is
your co-host.
Your co-host, I am.
Your co-host has been in the hospital.
And
your co-host has been trying to get a hold of you for the past 2 weeks.
I swear, Santa Claus has given me a big lump of lava cold this year because I've been so horrible to you, and I feel like so bad. I don't know what's going on. I have Mountain Man needs a laptop, and it's sitting right here where it's been for a week because I haven't been able to drop it off to him. And I'm telling you, I'm like the worst friend. I'm like in the doggy house right now for friends because I've been horrendous. So I'm going to have to make it up to Mountain Man because I feel so bad because I love you so much, but I haven't been showing it because I've been, like, not around when you needed me, and I'm so sorry. You forgive me?
I forgive you, but I was just trying to call in on the other number, and I don't think you were – I don't know if you could see
I did, but I couldn't click over because I was already on the thing. We're going to have to figure out how to do that so you don't use up your minutes. But how is it going? How are you doing?
I am doing great. You will have your control board operator back for Wednesday night.
Yes!
How is that?
Absolutely.
My man will be back in the booth Wednesday night, people. So
hallelujah. Mountain Man's going to be back. I'm telling you, for our listeners, they're like, what is going on? Oh, and not even that. Today was hysterical. I've been doing some moving around to get things ready for the holidays, and I somehow messed up the internet. So I'm sitting there going, oh, great. My show is in 20 minutes, and I can't figure out which wire goes where. It was literally down to the wire, no pun intended, and I finally figured out which wire went where, and I got it working just in time to get the show on the air. So I'm like, oh, man, I need Mountain Man back. Where are you? I'm so
Mountain Man is back in the house, people. Hello to everybody who's in the chat room.
Yeah.
I don't know who's in the chat room, but I want to say hello to all of you folks and whoever is listening.
Yes,
some more people.
Bill.
Yes, we're back. And
yeah,
we will
be
back.
We got Robert in the chat room, Bill. We have guest 2507, Mary, and another Robert. We got two Roberts in the building. Yeah, so it's great. And we're going to have a great guest today. So I'm so glad that you got through. And like I said, I am like the worst friend in the world because I can't even get back to you, my phone. I swear I am going to take care of it. I put it on my list that I am getting a new phone.
I thought you were going to take care of it 2 weeks ago. You told me 2 weeks ago when I was in the other hospital, you were going to take care of it. And here it is, 2.5 weeks later.
Yeah, no, there's a story to it. I was specifically prohibited from buying anything for myself for the next 3 weeks because of the holidays. So I have the feeling there's going to be a phone under the tree, and whoever's getting it for me didn't want me to go out and buy one. So I'm not allowed to go get anything for myself.
Well, then, guess what? How is your car running? Is it running okay or what?
No,
how is that
is
SUV running?
I'm telling you, it makes a noise, and for my listeners, you must know that I'm, like, anal about noises because my ex-husband was a mechanic, so he always taught me about all these noises and stuff. So it was making noises, and I'm like, I can't drive it, and my husband's like, you're hearing things. But finally, he took it to the mechanic. I'm glad he listened to me. There was something wrong with it. They had to order the parts, so I can't drive very far right now. So I'm not, I'm within like a mile radius of the house. But the Wednesday I'm getting it fixed, so I should be back on the road by Wednesday night, Thursday. I'm psyched because then I can be free, people. Mountain Man, can you hang with us for a little bit?
No, because I'm using up my minutes.
He's using his minutes. I know. Well, Mountain Man, thank you so much for calling me. And like I said, I'm so sorry I've been like the worst friend in the world. But I will definitely make it up to you. I'll figure something out to make it up to you, and I'm so psyched to know you're going to be back on Wednesday. Yes!
Please call me tomorrow night.
I will. I will call you tomorrow night, and if not, you will come and hunt me. I know you will.
Yes, I will, because I have my ride sitting right next to me.
I know
and
you
will. And we will come and hunt you down.
I know you will.
We may disappoint you tomorrow
then.
Night.
Yes, I will. I promise. I will call you. So you take care of yourself. I'm so psyched. I will talk to you tomorrow, and I'm so excited you're going to be back on the show on Wednesday. I mean, it's absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely.
Everybody that is on the show tonight, like Charlie said, it's Motivational Monday. So keep all your motivations going.
All right.
And
I'm so psyched.
Everyone have a great night, and we will talk to everybody. Mountain Man will be back in the chat room on the switchboard on Wednesday, so we will see you then.
Awesome.
Peace and love you all.
All right,
have a good night.
I will talk to you tomorrow. Good night, sweetie. Thanks for calling.
Right. Yep, bye-bye.
Bye. I'm telling you, he is amazing. Like, he does so much behind the scenes for the show that I don't even know how I could do it without him. All right, now getting to our... Oh, it's so good to... Hello.
Hello.
How are you? Is this Tom?
This is.
Awesome.
Thank you so much.
You're
welcome. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
I am so excited to have you. It's been crazy because my co-host was in the hospital for 2 weeks, and I was just like, But I'm glad he's going to be back on Wednesday, and I'm real excited, and I'm excited to have you on the show. Let's get to it. For our listeners, you want to tell us a little bit about who you are and what you're into and what you're about?
Sure. I'm Tom Varnum, and I am a high school English teacher. Been a high school English teacher for the last, 16. This is my 17th year. And I'm also a coach, and I am presently the girls' varsity basketball coach at Lowell Catholic High School. Mm-hmm. And this will be my 7th year. And before that, I was the boys' varsity coach, basketball coach at Tingsboro High School.
Mm-hmm.
I have been the golf coach, women's golf coach at Boston University. I have been the golf coach at Tingsboro High School. I've coached tennis, and I've coached baseball. So pretty much my life since I got out of college is teaching and coaching and at the high school level and the college level, and I love it.
That's excellent. Now, what did you major in college? Is this something that you knew you were going to go into, or is that something you just fell into after you graduated?
Yeah, I had a pretty good idea that that's the path I wanted to pursue. My father was a high school teacher. He was a phys ed teacher and a coach, and I enjoyed watching his what he did and the influence he had on people, and I thought that was pretty special, the former players and former students that he had would come up to him and say, "Wow, you know, it's great to see you again. You know, I had so much fun in your class. You taught me a lot." And I just thought that was a great compliment to him. And I said, "Well, that's something that I would really like to get into." And so I majored in English. I really like to write, so I majored in English. And I started coaching when I was very young. When I was in high school, I was coaching youth teams, just on a volunteer basis. And after I got out of college, I worked at colleges for about 5 years. And then when I got my first teaching job, they asked if I wanted to coach a junior high basketball team. And I said, "Absolutely." And they said, "Well, we haven't told you what the salary is yet." I said, I get paid for this? This is fantastic. So that was one of the best things to discover. Hey, I'm actually going to get paid for doing this. And
reason I really wanted to have you on the show is because, you know, you hear about coaches. Okay, great, that's all well and good. I know there's a lot of, especially in our society, there's a big pressure on sports for kids, and, you know, on excelling and being really good at it, and then you get the pressure of the scholarships. When you're at the high school level, you got to be really good for the scholarships. But what I like about you, and what I want you to talk a little bit about, your coaching philosophy, the way you get, and my experience, of course, is with the 7 years that you've been at Lowell Catholic, because I had a daughter that actually was in your team for a few years, is the philosophy that you teach them that goes way beyond anything that happens on the court. Can you elaborate a little bit about that?
Sure. I think that's probably why I like coaching basketball the most, because basketball is really one of the most, I think it's the purest team sport, where everyone really needs to work together. And if everyone does work together, you can overcome one or two superstars on the other team. Mm-hmm. And when we took over at Lowell Catholic, the team that I took over, they had one win the previous season, and they had no mm-hmm. seniors returning. So we were starting really from the bottom up, and we had some players who had never really played basketball before, and just were coming out to do something, to do an activity, and that's great. And you just have to, especially in a situation like that, you have to encourage small victories, and, you know, not to sound cliched, but accentuate the positive, because mm-hmm. you know, you're going to have a lot of setbacks, especially with a young inexperienced team or a young inexperienced group of people. Yeah, it doesn't matter if you're coaching a team or you're leading a scout troop or you're a preschool teacher. They're all learning new things and they're all trying new things, and they're going to make mistakes. And you have to focus on the positive things that they do and build on those things and sort of minimize the mistakes they make and say, you know what, you made the mistake, and now next time we learn from it and we don't make that mistake the next time.
Now, that's a great philosophy, and I know a lot of people say, well, that's all well and good. You know, you incorporate that, but the thing is, and then people focus on the fact that, well, that's all well and good, but you're not really teaching them about the sport, and you guys aren't being competitive. But that's not the case with your team, and I know, because as a parent, I've suffered through the season where it was one win and, you know, all these losses and the morale, that the lack of morale with the girls, they were feeling so bad about themselves. And then, of course, human nature to start, you know, finding fault where there really isn't any. There's just no cohesiveness. But you as a coach have been able to take the philosophy you just talked about, incorporate it into girls, and I'm talking about the basketball team, to a group of girls that not all are superstars, like you yourself said, some have never played before, some hadn't really played that much, and you've actually been able to turn them into a championship caliber team, into a competitive team, into a team that qualifies the states and gives teams that are a lot bigger, a lot more talented, quote unquote, a real run for the money. How do you think you've been able to do that?
Well, I think I've had a lot of help. The school has been very supportive of me. The athletic director, my assistant coach, I have to give credit to my assistant coach, Kevin Regan, who was actually at the school before I was. He's done a great job. But you have to, one of the things that that I concentrate on is you need to put people in positions where they can be successful. It may be a small role, it may be a certain thing that they do well, and it might be a small part of the whole, but if you put people in positions where they can be successful, their confidence will grow, and they will be able to feel confident enough to take risks and develop new talents. So if I have a player who is really not a great shooter or not a great dribbler, and so you know what, these are your strengths. You're a great defensive player, you're a good rebounder, and that's really all I expect of you right now. You do those things really well, and then understand what you're capable of and what you're not capable of. And if you can do that in the game, you will have success because you're doing things that you know how to do. And once that success comes, now you can start to branch out and say, okay, you know what, I'm going to try to work on this part of my game or this part of my life and break out and build on that success and try something new and then maybe taste some success in a different area.
Right, and the other thing, too, is that you've also been able, like you just said, incorporate it into another area, and that's easier said than done. But you've actually shown these girls how to do that. And the other thing that gets me is the way you incorporate this is that you build leaders among the girls. And by doing that, it shows them that they can be in a leadership position. And the other thing that I would like you to talk a little bit about is how do you incorporate that philosophy where I see where the girls actually start mentoring the newer girls and the less talented girls or the girls that don't know as much or maybe shyer or whatever into incorporating them into the group and actually making them feel like part of the team?
Well, I'd like to take a lot of credit for building leaders, but really a job as a teacher or a job as a coach is to bring the leader out from within the person that you're dealing with. You know, leaders aren't made. They're nurtured. They're encouraged, and if you can give them a direction to follow and a direction that they're comfortable in, and they follow some guidelines that you might have set for them, but they can see what the end goal is going to be. That gives them a lot of confidence to become the leader that I think most people have within them, that they can become that leader. And it's been very interesting to see over the course of, for the 4 years where I've worked with both boys and girls at high school in sports and in the classroom, to see them grow from as you said, the shy, immature, quiet freshman to a very self-confident, assertive, mentoring type of person as a junior or senior. And I try to give them as much feedback as I can and as much positive reinforcement as I can. Say, listen, you can do this. You know how to do this. You've been through it, and now it's almost your responsibility to pass that on to the next generation. And it's really helped. And any coach or any leader will tell you that's the way it works. If you can build your team or your group to know what expectations you have and what expectations are going to lead them to success, they will show the next group in how it's done even before you get to talk to the next group and say, okay, this is how it's done. So I think that once you, it all comes down to giving them the confidence to understand their strengths and understand their weaknesses and capitalize on those strengths and build their skills so that they can work at a better level than they have before.
Now, the other thing is, too, that a lot of people say, okay, that's great. You've got that feel-good philosophy. You're building these girls up. You're building up the self-esteem. And the thing is, though, you've also built up the basketball program while you've done that because you literally took a basketball program that, I mean, for most people that our listeners, if you don't know, Low Catholic High School was merged out of three or four other schools that were not doing so great financially. And the school itself has only been around, I think, since 89?
Yes.
If I'm not mistaken. So it's
celebrating their anniversary this year.
Yeah, their 20th anniversary. So you've taken a school that was very tiny, and in this area, There were other private schools to compete with. There was a huge public school to compete with. And everybody that is gearing towards sports is saying, well, I need to go where I'm going to get the most exposure and the most chance to win. That wasn't the case of Low Catholic. And I hate to say it, girls' sports kind of always suffer a little bit because there's so much peer pressure at that age and not all the girls that could play do. So you basically came into a program 7 years ago that, being polite, was really ragga-taggy because of the fact that there was just very few girls. And then, of course, you had other sports like cheerleading and that were pulling the girls away from the basketball season. So how were you able to get this program to the level that you are now? I mean, you went from a basketball team that barely won one game the first year before you mm-hmm. came, and now you've taken it to a level where they've won their division and repeatedly qualify for state. And not only do they qualify for state, they actually make it one or two rounds in there, and they go up against really tough teams, and they give them a run for their money. What do you think has been the has given you the opportunity to do this?
Well, I think there are two things that I think were really important, especially in the first few years. And the first thing is you got to make it fun. You have to make it fun. You have to make them want to be there and want to come out. And one of the advantages of coaching is you usually have, when you're coaching, you have a captive audience. Every kid, especially at the high school level, who comes out for a sport wants to be there and wants to learn and really wants to improve. And it's, unfortunately, it's not that way in the classroom. I get kids in my classroom, yeah, I'm here in English class in second period, and, you know, I'd really rather be someone else. But if you get, most of the time, these kids on the court, they really want to be there. And the first thing I had to do for the program is to make it fun and to incorporate things in the practices, games, drills, competitions, what have you, that make it fun, because I knew going in, and I knew the athletic history of the school. I knew going in that this was going to be a very, you know, challenging task for any coach, and I had come off a career at coaching boys at Kingsborough High School. We had won three league championships, and we had qualified for the state tournament for 5 years in a row, and I just felt it was kind of time for a change. And I was going from, you know, one of the most consistently successful programs in the area to the bottom, almost the bottom of the barrel, if not the bottom of the barrel.
Right.
So the first thing I had to do was I had to make it fun. I had to make the girls want to come to practice and want to improve. And the second thing that I had to do was I had to encourage a family atmosphere. And there, you know, there are several different ways you can do that. But I remember one particular game early in our first season, we were struggling, to say the least, in a game. And one of the returning players from the previous year was very upset in the locker room at halftime, you know, saying, you know, why did we schedule this game? We can't compete with this team. What are we doing here? And, you know, we talked very, very sternly to her and said, listen, this is what we have to do. This is the schedule that we were given. We're going to do our best, and we'll learn from it, and we'll move on. And if you don't like that, then, you know, this might not be the place for you. And you've got to reinforce the idea that, listen, we're all in this together, and if we're not all pulling together, then it's going to be more difficult. And I think that was one of the turning points where we said, listen, if you don't want to be here, you know, the rest of us do want to be here. When the rest mm-hmm. of us want to learn, no matter how bad the score was, and it was a bad score if I remember correctly at the mm-hmm. halftime of that game. I said, listen, hey, this is a long term project, and we need to take baby steps, and it's not going to all come at once.
Exactly. Now, I have to ask too, because I know having the parents involved is real important, but I too have coached, and there's a fine line between parents that want to be involved and parents that want to tell you what to do and take over. And to have that balance, because unfortunately not all the parents that keep telling the coach what to do actually know what they're doing, understand the concepts, you know what I mean? They may think they do, but they really don't. I mean, and as a parent, I know that for me it was a fine line between being upset about what I was seeing on the field, on the court before you came along, and then being able to do something about it from a parent's point of view. How do you keep that balance to get the parents involved? Because I know all your parents are very involved. They're very supportive of the program. I mean, they're always there. They're always, you know, trying to somehow help any way they can. How have you been able to balance that without getting into that point where the parents are crossing the line into basically telling you how to do your job?
Well, I agree with you totally on the support. We have some fantastic, and we have had some fantastic parents and fantastic support for our program, even through the lean years. We often travel to other schools, and we're the road team, and our fans will outnumber the home fans, and it's an amazing thing when that happens. But
yeah.
One of the things that's important, and I do this at the beginning of every season, and then, in fact, I just had the meeting with my parents last Friday, is I send them a letter and I say, this is what we expect of our players and this is what you can expect of us. This is what we expect for time commitment. This is what we expect of behavior. This is what we expect academically. And this is what you can expect from us. This is how we're going to do the playing time at the freshman level. This is how we're going to do the playing time at the junior varsity level. This is how we're going to do the playing time at the varsity level. And one of the things that I talked about, because the big thing usually is, as you said, it's a lot of parents think they know more than the coach or they have a better idea as to how to do things. And the thing that I focus on is one of the benefits of athletics is building self-esteem of students.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to get that benefit for your child, they need to be the one that comes to the coach and says, Coach, and I tell my players this every year, if they're not getting the playing time that they think they deserve, they need to come to me and say, Coach, what do I need to work on to get more playing time? Not, Coach, how come I'm not playing more?
Right.
Coach, what do I need to work on to get better, to get more playing time? And I really encourage and tell the parents, that should be the player's job to do
mm-hmm.
that, because what that does is they're taking control of the situation, they're advocating for themselves, and it's a growth process for them, you know, to come to an adult and say, okay, you know, I need some more information from you to figure out how I can get better on the court. And that's one of the things that I do. And the other thing that I do that I found is fantastic, if you do a Google web search or any other search engine for the Ten Commandments of the Parents of Athletes. You'll come up with, I forget who wrote it. I've seen it in several different places. It appeared in Sports Illustrated probably about 10 years ago, if I remember correctly.
Uh-huh.
And it gives parents a list of 10 commandments about how they should look at their child as an athlete. And there are several things on there. And one of probably the most important is, be objective when you are evaluating your child's ability.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really the big thing that parents sometimes have a problem with. You know, I have an 11-year-old son, and I know you have sons and daughters, and I know
mm-hmm.
them very well. And it's really hard for us to look at our children objectively because, you know, we love them. We've nurtured them. They're you know, they're a huge part of our lives. But that's one thing that parents need to understand is you need to judge it objectively.
Right.
And one of the other things that they need to look at is my responsibility is to improve my players as people, but also to improve the team as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the goal of an individual is not the same as the goal of the team. And that's something that parents also have to understand.
Mm-hmm. Now, how do you, when you have a situation like that, let's say you have a player that happens to be a superstar and they're really focused and this is what they want to do, they're going to play basketball in college and maybe beyond, and they have an agenda. This is their agenda, and everybody else is just pawns in their game plan. How do you incorporate someone with that philosophy or that mindset with the other players and to be able to make it work. And again, a lot of times if a child has that philosophy, the parents can be very demanding as well. So how do you incorporate them to be able to keep the cohesiveness of the team going?
Well, again, you need to focus on their strengths and help them to work to overcome their weaknesses. Now, their weaknesses might be, an inability to see sort of the big picture as to how things work. But you want to try to get the understanding with the player or with a person that a truly great player or a truly great person makes everybody else around them better.
Mm-hmm.
And the example that I often use, and some of my players now kind of look at me funny like, wow, that's really old, is Larry Bird, the Celtics
mm-hmm.
Hall of Famer. And he was slow. He was a big guy in a superstar league, and he worked really hard, but he also did everything he could to make everybody on his team a better player. And that's where the truly great players and truly great people are. If you can make everybody around you better, then that's the true measurement of someone who is going to be successful further on down the road. And you talk to players who have those aspirations, and I've had a couple of them that have played for me. I had one young man who played for me at Tyngsborough High School who eventually ended up in he was an All-American, a soccer All-American at University of Massachusetts Lowell, and he ended up playing in the United Soccer League at their highest level, the level just below the MLS. And, you know, they have to understand that they might be the superstar on this team. They might be the best player in this team. But if they're going to go to college at the next level, everybody who goes to college was the superstar on their team. And if they don't understand how to play together with the rest of the team, they're going to have a very hard time being successful in college. And it's also one of the reasons why I like to encourage, and this is something that kind of runs contrary to what a lot of other coaches feel, I encourage my players to play different sports at different time of the year. I think that one of the biggest problems with youth sports right now is specialization. And having a kid play, soccer in the fall, and then indoor soccer in the winter, and then spring soccer, and then travel soccer in the summer, and then it starts again. And other than, the medical reasons and health and, wearing out certain muscle groups and things like that, I think it's really important for players to understand different roles on a team. If you have a superstar or someone who's a starter and a key player for one sport, and that's all they ever know, they don't really learn to appreciate the other players on the team who need to play well and need to do their job and need to be appreciated in order for the team to be successful. If you're the superstar guard on the basketball team, but you're also on the soccer team and you're one of the role players, now when it comes time for basketball season again, you're going to understand how important that role player is, and you're going to understand how that person wants to be treated. So I think in addition to the physical drawbacks of specialization, there's a sort of emotional, mental drawback to specialization in sports. They need to understand that everybody has a role on a team, and you just have to work to find that role for that person, and they can be successful.
You know, it's amazing that you say that, because I'm a big proponent of that, too, because I believe it helps them learn more. And even when I coach, one of the things I always do is don't let me hear you say anything negative about the goalie, or you're going to be playing goalie next game.
Mm-hmm.
And then they give me I'm not a goalie. So if you're not a goalie, why are you telling the goalie how to do their job? And they don't realize how hard it is until you put them in the net and they have these balls coming at them 20, 30 miles an hour. Now they get a deeper appreciation. And there just doesn't seem to be enough of that. And you're right. Nowadays, there's just so much specialization with the sports that you're seeing kids that are having injuries that they shouldn't be having at 15, 16, 17 years of age. And some are like career-ending injuries because of the overusage of certain parts of the body.
Mm-hmm.
Not enough usage. And you can get burnt out. And which leads me to what I was going to ask you next. One of the things that I love about your philosophy, and I've kind of reflected on, is that you don't do the typical, okay, we lost, so everybody has to be really bummed out and really sad and really miserable when we get on that bus. Never saw that with your girls. And can you explain a little bit about what the philosophy is that you apply to that?
Sure. And when I was, you know, when I was in high school, you know, that philosophy was still pretty much in play. If you know, I played football in high school, and you know, God forbid, if you lost a game and you even cracked a smile on the bus on the way home, it was, you know, you'd be running until you're, you know, you got physically sick on the side of the field the next day.
Yeah.
Those days, athletes have changed, their expectations have changed, and it doesn't work. I don't think that sort of philosophy works anymore. And especially when we started, I knew that the victories weren't going to be few and far between. So we had to, you know, we had to celebrate moral victories and small steps. And I remember there was one game in the first or second year we were playing one of the schools, and I think they eventually were state champion that year. And they just poured it on us, and we lost by 40, 50 points.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a miserable, for me as a coach, it was a miserable experience, because there's nothing I could do. The team had far more talent than we did. And we tried our hardest, but there was just nothing to do. And the next day at practice, I said, you know, I've got to do something to just remind these girls why they're here. So we kind of, you know, threw a whole bunch of ideas together, and I think it was an Olympic year. It might have been 2000, 2004 or something. And
mm-hmm.
we had the basketball Olympics, and we did the three-quarter court shot, and we did the dribble relays, and we did a passing relay, and we just had a whole bunch of games and competitions, and we awarded little silly medals and things like that. And that's all we did for the practice for 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And we were laughing, and we were joking, and the kids were having fun. And then I brought them together at the end, and I said, no, I said, do you know why we had this kind of a practice today? And they all kind of looked at me funny. And I said, well, more than anything today, after what happened to you yesterday, you needed to remember that basketball was fun.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can just remind them every now and then of the fun that they have in doing the activity, that they're there even after a really hard defeat, that makes them, you know, want to come back. And if you ask any probably any professional or collegiate level coach, that I think it's more, you're more successful if after a big win you come down hard on them and say, listen, we didn't really play as well as we could have. But in a game where you were just outmatched, and there was nothing they could do, and they didn't quit, and they just kept trying, but there was nothing you could do.
Mm-hmm.
There's no purpose to, you know, so to speak, beating a dead horse. It just, you need to remind them of why they're here and how much fun they can have, so that the next time, you know, it won't be maybe a, you know, 50-point loss. Maybe it'll be a 20-point loss.
And you know, the other thing too is that even though you guys really were brutalized, because some of these coaches, and this is something that I would love to share with our listeners, because of the fact that on top of the fact that you are teaching these girls how to be losers, in the sense of that, okay, you lose and then you have two choices. You either stew about it, get angry, or you get over it and move on and figure out how not to feel that way again. But you've actually taught these girls empathy for the other team when they've lost. And you've never run up the score on another opponent, which other coaches, you know, you mentioned, they run up the score. They will keep their starters in for the whole game just to get them to have double digits and to whatever. You don't do that. You get to a point that if you are outscoring an opponent and it's evident that you have more talent and more ability, you will pull your starters out, you will give your bench a chance, and you teach them to be gracious. Now, where do you think that came from for you? Because I know that this is something that's very important, and sadly it just doesn't happen enough. Because sometimes when you're coaching, you get so caught up in the statistics and the numbers and the whole thing that comes with running an athletic program, that you forget about the fact that these are really very young girls, very young boys, and there's a lot of self-esteem issues still involved in that. So what do you think has gotten you to that, to being such a gentleman when it comes to the opponent as well?
Well, I think a lot of it really goes back to my father. I look up to him more than anybody. He's absolutely my hero. And the way he coached, and he coached football, he coached baseball, he coached my brothers and I when we were young in baseball and in basketball, and the way he dealt with people, and the way he taught us the right way to play and the right way to coach. And I've got to give him a great deal of credit. You know, he was just recently inducted into the Dedham High School Athletic Hall of Fame.
Excellent.
And it was a great honor to be there with him to see that happen. And I really give him a lot of credit because that's the way he did things. And whether it was, Little League baseball that I helped coach my little brothers when I was younger, I helped him coach them, or whether it was high school football or he was a college football coach at Curry College, that's just the way he did things. And it just made sense to me that, there's no reason to do that. You don't want some kid on, you certainly want your own players to be able to look back at their career with you and say, wow, he was a good guy who did the right thing, taught me a lot, not just about basketball or football or baseball or whatever, but taught me about life. And you don't want the opponents to be saying, that guy was a jerk. That guy kept running the score up. And that's what some of my players have said about coaches that we faced, and I tended to agree with them at certain points. I want to have it so that if a player that played against me, against one of my teams, sees me and recognizes, hey, coach, how you doing? Geez, it was great when we played you guys. You played some great games, and your team was always well prepared and well coached, and we loved playing you guys. That to me is the ultimate respect that you can get as a coach, if you can earn the respect of your opponents.
Right.
Hopefully you'll earn the respect of your own players, but if you can earn the respect of your opponents and not the fear of your opponents and not the anger of your opponents, then that's one of the criteria I would use for a successful coach. Would you want to play for that coach?
Mm-hmm. And it's so true. It's so very important, because I noticed, like, when my daughter was on the team for 4 years, she loved it. I mean, she was excited about going to practice, and basketball wasn't her main sport. She came to it late. I mean, she had her dad that played basketball really well, but her thing was that she didn't want to. And then when she finally decided to, it was later in her life. And for her, it was something that she liked. It was fun. She enjoyed the practices. She enjoyed hanging out with the other girls. And even when she had rough patches, because obviously teenagers, they have their rough patches, she knew how to deal with them. And the leadership skills that she walked away with were just phenomenal, because they just taught her so much about life. And I know that even now when we talk, her in college right now, she still talks about you and some of the stuff that she saw you do, and she has been able to incorporate into her life as far as leadership and mentoring, how to teach, treat people when they're down or they're not feeling good about themselves. So my thing is, where do you see the program going from now on?
Well, that's first of all, that I really appreciate you telling me that, and that obviously makes me feel very proud of what we've accomplished there. And we've really come a long way. I think your daughter's freshman year, which was my first year, we won 4 games, and then by the time she was a senior, we won 13 games. That's come a long way. And then the next couple of years since she graduated, we won 13 again, and we won 16 last year. So we're pushing the envelope here as far as success is concerned. We've been able to build a program where people want to come and play in our program because of the success. And the school's been great and very, very helpful and supportive. And it's our goal now is we want to take the next step and really make a difference in state tournament play. And it's a very big step because mm-hmm. you have to, some of the mistakes that you might be able to get away with in the regular season, you're not going to get away with in the tournament season. And
that is so true.
And we've had a lot of experience now in tournament play in the last couple of years, and we've been able to have a little bit of success, but we've also had some disappointments. Last year we lost a total of five games. We were 16-5, and three of those five games were to the same team. We just couldn't beat that team. We lost them twice in the regular season. We lost them once in the tournament. But one of the things that I always talk about with the girls at the beginning of every year is we always want to do something positive this year that we did not do the year before. And we've been able to accomplish that every year. Last year, we won our first Catholic Central League championship in the program's history. And now, the year before that, we won our first tournament, state tournament game. And the year before that, we won more games than any other team had won in school history. So every year we try to add something new. You know, this year we're looking for back-to-back league championships, and we're looking for more wins than we had last year, and we're looking for two wins in the state tournament instead of just one. So you want to set realistic goals, and I think those are realistic goals for our team coming back. But you always have to understand, as well as a coach, that it runs in cycles. You can build a really good program and do things the right way, and just, you know, whether it's injuries or other circumstances that are beyond your control, you know, the cycle may go down a little bit, but you have to remember to remember how you got the success that you got and stick with the plan that you have, and eventually your cycle should come back up.
Definitely. I have to tell you, I can't believe we're out of time. I got the 3-minute signal in my ear.
It does seem like it went very fast.
It does. It goes very fast. I'm telling you, it's so funny. I get my guests and they're like, I don't think I can talk for an hour. And I'm like, yeah, the guests I pick are really good because they have amazing subjects to talk about. And I'm definitely going to have to invite you back on, because I'm telling you, you should really think about writing a book, because I've been a parent at Lowell Catholic for close to almost the whole 20 years. So I know the peaks and valleys that you're talking about. But for me, when you coach my daughter, it was like the first time in school history that I could go to a game and not pull my hair out, because I would have to deal with the ramifications of the mopey face, that I got yelled at, my coach stinks, I hate it, totally forgetting that you never let them forget that they were there to have fun, and the learning and everything else is just going to follow. And you did so much to build these girls' self-esteem, because at that age, it's very rough for girls, because mm-hmm. there's so much pressures from the outside world, especially when they're trying to be athletes and to feel like people are going to take them serious. So for you to go into this program, build up their self-esteem, build up the program, showing it, look, if you trust me and you do what I'm telling you, we will win, and you have. You've kept your word, but also putting accountability on them that, yeah, it will happen, but this is what I need from you. And I think it's such a great winning philosophy, and I really think it's something that a lot more people need to hear about and to learn, because it does a lot to these girls in not only teaching them what they can do, but in just building their self-esteem and making great leaders for other people as well. So I'm so grateful that you were on the show. Thank you so much for coming.
And I really appreciate you having me.
Oh, absolutely, definitely. Like I said, I'm going to definitely invite you back on later in the season. Maybe we can get a couple of your captains to come on and talk as well. That would be nice to hear from the girls, too.
I think that would be a great idea. I think they would like to do that.
Oh, definitely. We'd love to do that. So, Tom, thank you so much for being with us. And for our listeners, remember, this is the Ordinary Woman Show, the Diamond in the Rough, and do not let anybody ever steal your dreams away. Have a great day, guys, and good night. And remember, stay motivated. Have a good one.
My black, my peoples, sort of. It's a struggle. You just gotta keep up.
walking. Keep your eyes on the prize. The other foot in front of you. You never know where life will take you, man. Ride with me.
Back in the 70s, Dad just a boulder. A little earlier, my grandma raised a daughter. A beautiful thing, she was a ghetto flower. Caught a young man's attention with her power. It was love at first sight, I saw she thought. But a couple months later, he left her with a broken heart. Young and naive, only 17. About to have a young mouth to feed. Had that, she could feel the shame. A couple months later, labor pains. She looked down in her new son's eyes.